Peter Gagg, who drives it through.
We hit the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate, we never won anything.
Man's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again, and Motherwell are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson, defenders backing off.
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. After a rather quiet episode last week, we've got plenty to talk about today. I'm joined by Jay and Busta as always, and also Steelman Online head honcho Ian Buchanan. Welcome back, Dukes.
Cheers, glad to be here.
Jay Buster, welcome along as always. Well, we...
Thank you.
Oh, sorry, I got overexcited there. We hit the stop button in recording last Sunday, and we didn't expect very much movement on the managerial front. 2 days later, Mark McGee was announced as a new manager. A return to the club, anyway. It's very much divided supporters. Jay, you've had a week to digest the news. What is your current take and your current feeling towards the appointment of Mark McGee as our new manager?
Well, you're right, it's a week to digest it, but my opinion's not changed. Very disappointed in the appointment. I don't think he should be anywhere near the manager's job. At the end of the day, the one thing that's kind of annoyed me is that I don't necessarily think it was the club themselves, but there was the article in the Herald about how, you know, well, Motherwell fans don't really know the full story behind why he left. I can't really speak for anybody else, but for me, why he left isn't relevant. I couldn't care less why he left. Football managers leave, that happens. But his conduct while he was our manager was unacceptable. I've never seen or heard a manager whore himself out for other jobs quite as blatantly and quite as frequently as Mark McGee did as Motherwell manager. I think it was quite obvious that he assumed that when he left, probably to take the Celtic job in his fantasy, you know, ideal world, he would never be back at Fir Park. So presumably it wasn't really an issue for him to completely disrespect the club in the way he did on quite a regular basis. So for me, there are certain occasions when, whether it's a player or a manager or whatever it is, it should go beyond simply, you know, their track record or how they did as a manager. For me, if you disrespect the club as much as Mark McGee did when he was here the first time around, then it should be simply, you know, shouldn't be considered for the position. So I'm very disappointed he's a manager. I obviously hope he does well. I'm still a Motherwell fan. I hope he does well in terms of the results, in terms of the performance. But that won't change my opinion that I don't think he should be anywhere near the job.
That's fairly strong words there, mate. But I know you're slightly more relaxed in terms of the appointment. Do you want to explain your current way of thinking?
Well, to be honest with you, again, I was disappointed. But I was more disappointed that we weren't willing to, you know, take a chance on someone else, to be fair. Like most of these, I heard the usual names, Valakari. I think we all agreed Valakari would have been our choice, but I was disappointed we weren't willing to take a chance on somebody else, that hadn't been here. I was a bit sort of against the signing of former players, certain ones anyway. So to bring back another former manager I was unsure of it. To be fair, still I'm unsure of it, but there's no argument with JC. His conduct while he was a manager, and he, you know, flashing himself about the town, looking for any job going that wasn't ours, basically, was unacceptable. But I don't hold grudges anyway, in any sort of form. So he's here. There's nothing really that, you know, me moaning about the fact he's our manager can do. I'm willing to give him a chance. See, if he comes in and he turns, you know, one or two of the players into something that resembles a footballer, you know, I don't think there'll be any arguments for the fans. It's all right saying, you know, no one's happy with him, or he's, you know, he's done this, he's done that. If, you know, we win three or four games in a row, or three or four games out of, you know, six or seven, you're going to see people coming round to him, basically. Listening to his, you know, his pre-match sort of thing, post-match, after Celtic, you know, it's the same old sort of stuff you hear. But I think, to be honest, you're hearing that for everybody, no matter who you're listening to. So I'm willing to give him a chance. Obviously, as Jay says, you know, we're all Motherwell fans. I don't think MD's going to completely turn their back on the club just because of one appointment, but I'm willing to give him a chance. I'm hoping, again, obviously, as expected, you know, I'm hoping that he does well. But there was a lot of people upset, very, very upset about it, and there's things that to be upset about, and I don't think to get that upset over the appointment of a football manager, especially, you know, when we're in a position where there's cries for we need somebody with a bit of experience. As I say, I was a bit disappointed we didn't take a chance on somebody else, but I can see the thinking behind it, and I'm, you know, as I say, I'm not going to be crying into my pint, you know, just because we've appointed a guy who wasn't very courteous towards us when he was here the last time.
That's kind of my thinking on it as well. I think that we possibly got to the stage where it was round about the interview process, and they perhaps analysed the candidates and saw that of these candidates, which we possibly will never know exactly who was on the shortlist, but I'm sure we've all got a rough idea. And McGee stood out as the man with by far the most experience, and that's why we've plumped for him. There shouldn't be much of a transition period, given that he's spent time at the club before. You would hope that he would very quickly settle into the role and push the team up the league, which, even though it's only coming towards the back end of October, it's already looking like it could be quite a long season. The thing I worry about, though, Bukes, is there was a pretty negative feeling around the club prior to the end of Ian Barraclough's tenure. The appointment of McGee certainly hasn't lifted the spirits.
No, not at all. I hear folks saying that McGee's, you know, the best man for the job. He's not the worst man for the job, but he's certainly not the best man for the job. I think there had to be some kind of imagination shown with the appointment to get, to say this word, unify the fans and the club, because the route, it's just, the whole thing, just, it's a headless beast. You know, you've got Les Hutchison that's come in with his loan and now he's in charge. That kind of smacks of somebody giving you any money and then telling you how to spend it. It's just, there's a definite lack of imagination in the appointment, and I certainly don't think McGee is the best man to take us forward. I mean, fair enough if he gets a couple of results, but you know, we'll be supporting the team, but I'll definitely not be supporting the manager. I don't think he's, you know, he burnt his bridges when he left. Well, he burnt his bridges in the January before he left, to be honest. You know, hawking himself for the Scotland job just so soon after a tragedy, you know, before Burley was appointed. You know, he would only take the Scotland job with Motherwell's blessing. You know, I think it was a pretty crass statement to make. And it just, even in my estimation for there.
Jay, there was a lot of talk from the owner of the football club about the long-term vision. Where do you think the appointment of a manager like Mark McGee sits in amongst that. Is that, in your opinion, a backwards step? It certainly doesn't seem like a long-term appointment. And I mean that in the sense that I don't see Mark McGee at the helm for 4 or 5 years, whereas I could have maybe seen Simo Vallecari, while still working his ticket towards a better job or a job at a higher level, you could see him building a reputation and trying to enhance himself. I can't really see McGee doing that.
I completely agree. You know, aside from personal opinions on his conduct and stuff like that, I do think that he isn't the type of manager who fits into that long-term vision at all. I mean, just, you know, even on a very basic level, at the end of the day, on very rare occasions, you'll get maybe a manager leaves a club because of family reasons or health concerns or that kind of thing. But 99% of the time, if a manager leaves your football club, it's either because they're not good enough or they don't want to be there. And that, for me, should instantly rule them out of getting the job again. And that's not the kind of man who is going to turn it on over a long period of time. It's a very, as you know, it's been mentioned, you know, the lack of imagination behind it. I think that's completely correct. I think it's an appointment where we're either going to be relatively mediocre and poor, which nobody wants, or we're going to be pretty decent, and true to form, McGee will be probably, you know, touting himself for another move, which is fair enough. You can use clubs as stepping stones, but I think to actually go after a guy who not only has tried to use Motherwell as a stepping stone in the past, but it's done so blatantly and so disrespectfully, I don't see how it remotely fits in to the idea of this long-term vision. Fair enough, if they've suddenly decided that Barraclough was such a disaster that we should just shelf all those plans and scrap the entire long-term vision, that might be what we've done. But for me, the two things aren't compatible. This long-term vision, 4 or 5 years in the future, that isn't compatible with a manager like Mark McGee.
Is there any comparison here between players who you maybe get 2 years out of during this 4 or 5 year period and move on to a manager who maybe, again, if it works out for McGee and we start getting results, we start doing well, is there a comparison between, say, we sign Louis Moult scores 30 goals this year, 30 goals next year, and, you know, moves on? Is there a comparison where McGee could maybe do the same? Is that any different from a player?
I would say it's completely different, because I think that the manager obviously has to, you know, it's a completely different role. He picks a team, he picks the players, he has a vision, and he's working towards something. Whereas if you get rid of McGee and bring someone else in, then what you have been working towards could suddenly end, because the next manager may not have the same approach. So rather than, you know, someone leaving and you go out and you bring in a player to replace Louis Moult who fits into that vision, instead you have the opportunity for someone to come in and implement their entirely different vision. So for me, it doesn't work, if we've scrapped that long term vision, fair enough, but for me, if you're looking for a manager who's going to treat it like a long term project, the guy who spent, you know, his entire time at your career trying to get a move elsewhere is the last person you go for.
Is there the danger in all of this that we're going to be feeling the effects of Ian Barraclough's time at the club for a long time to come, given he was so extensively backed in the transfer market?
Yes, there is, basically. I think I don't think there's players in that squad who look like they are players or have looked like they are players, but we're definitely not seeing that in a few of them. And then there's the few sort of panic buys, as they've been described. Theo Robinson, I honestly don't know what that was, to be fair. Even David Clarkson, in my opinion as well, I don't know, you know, where that one was coming from as well. But I think, as you say, there's going to be players at the club who, you know, maybe get a year, 2 years in the contract for now, who, as you say, might not be able to get rid of. They're not going to walk away for nothing. And as you say, Ian Barraclough looks as if he was certainly back financially. So you'll maybe see McGee, or if McGee leaves and somebody else comes in, you know, they probably won't get the same sort of backing.
Yeah, that sounds exactly right. I just kind of worry that you back a manager to that extent and then don't see it through to the end. Then is this a cheaper appointment where the manager won't be back, given they've been burnt once in that regard, that it would be hard to allow McGee to build his own side. So he's going to need to get the best out of a number of Ian Barraclough's signings. That kind of takes me on quite nicely, Bukes, to a certain individual. We always say that we don't want to kind of single out individuals, but I think there's a prime example here of someone that's really struggling to live up to the billing that he very rightly earned himself last season with some fantastic performances. Marvin Johnson really seems to be going through the motions in the early parts of this season. He could have almost considered himself quite lucky to have stayed on the park for the first 45 minutes against Celtic. He was that uninterested looking, and his performance was that poor.
Marvin Johnson, an enigma, definitely. You know, even when he was playing well, there was times you looked and thought, you know, you did play for Kidderminster. You know, that was your level. It's hard to say anything else, because I mean, against Celtic, it was completely not the races. You know, 10 minutes in, I turned to my mate. I says, "Look, he's not on us today. He'd be as well sitting up here beside us and somebody else getting a game, because you have to." And McGee stuck with him, you know, and he stuck with him on the right. I said, "They put him out on the left. Even, you know, right, you're doing nothing there. Go and play where you want to play. Play on the left." We'll rejig the formation here a wee bit or something, but no, it was just, it looks like a non-league player. Whether that's been, he's not done a pre-season properly, or, you know, he's carrying an injury and we're just trying to get the, you know, make the best of what we've got. But surely if he's not fit, then you don't play him. You know, it's as simple as that. You play Dom Thomas, and you—I mean, it looked as if McGee had written off the Celtic game anyway with his decidedly bizarre formation. So, you know, playing Johnson and him playing poorly was never an experiment that he needed to see. You know, he could have played Dom Thomas in there, or he could have played me in there for, like, you know, for Johnson done.
Yeah,
I think.
Sorry, on you go.
I was going to say, I think it's a bit harsh to judge Johnson on Celtic, but luckily enough, that's not what we're doing, because Johnson's been like that all season. McGee did sort of say in his post-match interview that he knows McDonald, he knows Lasley, he knows Clarkson, and he didn't know one or two of the other players, so he wanted to see what they're doing. Maybe, as I say, maybe that's what he was looking for Johnson. He'd seen, you know, the playoff clips of him, basically. I was hoping to see something like that. And after, what, 60, 70 minutes, he's thought they'll pull him off. But the whole sort of, the whole team, basically, on Saturday were, it was basically a nothing game. Everything was totally beige about it. But Johnson, in general, this season has been absolutely honking, other than his first 45 minutes against Inverness, I think.
Yeah, he's certainly,
I think,
not the worst lived up to the bill as well.
I think the worst thing about Saturday was the lack of fight. I've seen Motherwell teams lose 7-0 and 7-1 to Celtic and put up more of a fight than we put up on Saturday, which, given McGee's reputation for, you know, I'm going to come in with a stopwatch and a, you know, a slide rule and make this team fitter and better, you would think the first thing you would tell your team to go in the park and do is fight, and they were just... It was insipid. You know, we lay down, damage limitation, and it was embarrassing, you know, to watch a team. I mean, the 7-1 game that we lost to Celtic a few years back, when they decided Andy Gorham wasn't fit to play because he's, you know, Irish connections, and we got turned around. The team fought like anything. And then Saturday, it wasn't there. Completely no there. It was just, okay, let's just get this passed. It's not acceptable. It's just not acceptable.
See, to be honest with you as well, and again, that's exactly how I felt. I mean, Saturday was, it was for me, a no-win situation for any of us. Don't get me wrong, if you know, if we went out there and put up a good performance and scored a goal or whatever, I'd have been delighted. But I honestly did feel as well, you know, the manager was in the job a couple of days. As long as we don't get an absolute tanking, that'll be fine with me. I think even the Aberdeen game coming up, I think it'll be a bit harsh to start judging McGee's second period on these two games. But I honestly did. I had written the game off in my mind. I know you were suggesting you thought McGee had probably done it, and it wouldn't surprise me. I know you're saying it's unacceptable. I do agree with that, but I had written that off as well, to be fair.
My main issue is the fact that in his post-match, he said he hadn't seen guys like Lang and hadn't seen Marvin Johnson. He used it as a training exercise, the game. You can't treat a game against the champions of Scotland as a friendly. It was a good chance for against a shaky Celtic defence, certainly, to actually go out there and have a go and see what we could get out of the game. Albeit if we go and lose 3-0 or 4-0, it was expected anyway. But to actually be so tame and not have any sort of attacking threat throughout the game. You've got your top goal scorer in Louis Moult deserted out in the wing. He couldn't get into the game. Wes Fletcher really, really struggled to make any sort of impact. It was almost as if he was slightly overawed by playing against Celtic. I just wondered. I know that the first two games, Celtic at home, Aberdeen away, no one was expecting to get anything from these games. But looking back in the game, we actually came away from Fir Park thinking, oh, well, at least it was only 1-0, because it really could have been as many as Celtic wanted. They could have went through the gears, and I think it really could have been embarrassing for us. It's a really tame start to the McGee era, where you look back to his first game and his last spell in charge, the St Mirren game, where the team had energy. I know they had a pre-season under their belts at that point, but they were sharp, they looked hungry and up for the game. It just looks like a team completely devoid of confidence, and to change these attitudes and these confidence levels around, that's going to take a hell of a lot of time.
Well, I didn't actually get the chance to hear his post-match comments, so it's interesting you said about him, you know, saying that he hadn't seen Lang. Well, he still hasn't, because he played him at defensive mid, so he's not actually seen Loy Lang play in his position. Which is a bit bizarre. Again, I mean, I don't want to make it sound as though I'm just kind of, you know, I've got some sort of personal vendetta, but it did strike me as being a little bit of, you know, a bit of an ego trip, you know, that kind of idea. I'm going to go in, I'm going to get into this game, I'm going to drop the captain, I'm going to, not only am I going to drop him, I'm going to play a centre half in his position. It just seemed to be a bit more about, you know, kind of coming in and making a statement. You know, yeah, I'm going to put the striker out in the left wing, I'm going to put a centre half at defensive mid because I'm the manager, and that's what I say goes. I had more that kind of feel about it, because I failed to see what he would have learned about someone. You know, if he's genuinely saying that, well, I hadn't seen Louis Lang before the game, well, he's not learned then, because he's played him out of position. So, you know, it wasn't even that he treated it as a friendly, it was just quite a bizarre exercise. It wasn't even, you know, particularly negative, it was just completely weird.
For the first half, Louis Lang looked like a toddler chasing a balloon. He couldn't get anywhere near it. And the thing is, his first touch, he knew that he was going to be absolutely crunched the second touch, because his second touch is a tackle every time. He's just not, I don't think he's got the footballing ability to play in the centre of the park anyway.
Well, what I don't understand is that if Mark McGee had never seen Louis Lang before, who told Mark McGee that he can play centre mid? Like, you know, someone has made that, I'm presuming someone said that, or Mark McGee's just came in and decided that that's going to happen, but I don't understand the logic behind playing a centre-half you've never seen and putting him at centre-mid. It was just so weird.
Well, the thing
to
is,
be fair,
he said, sorry, he just to, sorry, on you go, Buster.
No, sorry, just to dive in there at that point as well. No, 100% sure he did say Louis Lang when he says he hadn't seen it. He did say he hadn't seen certain players. I can't mind if he said Louis Lang. What he did say about Louis Lang at one point was he thought he would do well in there. During the first half, though, he was finding it difficult to communicate to him what he was supposed to be doing in there. And then in the second half, he says, you know, you got the message to him at half time, whatever. And he says in the second half, he thought he was a lot better than he was in the first, which was true. But as you say, whether or no, he's got the ability to play centre mid. You were right, Spar. Every second touch was a tackle, basically, for him.
He wasn't a lot better either. It was miles away from being average. You can't really blame him, because he's not a central midfielder, not in his life. But to be put in there against Celtic, who are strong in the middle of the park, I don't really know what the best case scenario was. Maybe Steve Robinson's looking for a way out, and he's like, "Hey, go play Louis in there, he'll do well."
I think he was maybe just looking for somebody to, you know, kick Scott Brown maybe, but
we've got the element Scott Brown ran that. Play them in there, organise a behind closed doors friendly. He's got them in for double training sessions this week, so surely you'd be as well using that time to find out about your players, rather than at 3 o'clock on a Saturday. I can't get my head around that. It's a bit of arrogance that we could have done without, really.
Well, if he's come in and he's the one that's in charge of the team, rather than maybe say Craigan. It was Craigan in the television box, I take it, aye?
Aye.
If anything, I'd maybe expected them to take a back seat, maybe get burn Craigan in beside him for that one, because Craigan was the one in the last 2 or 3 weeks is in charge. But as you say, you're saying give it a go in these development games, but he didn't have any of that before that, so he's just sitting there blind. You see, what he was doing was a bit mental by the looks of it, but that's what he's been left with. That's what he's going to, if he tried it and it came off, you'd be here talking about how it was a masterstroke, you know. So,
can I agree?
Unfortunately, it didn't. But as you say, it's one of the things, and I'm not going to make any sort of judgments on, you know, what he's planning or what he's thinking of doing just because of that one game. If he does it for 4 or 5 games in a row, I'll start questioning it. But if he does it for 2 or 3 games in a row, I'll start questioning it. But as I say, that game to me was absolutely nothing anyway. It felt as if there was no real effort for ourselves. There was no, we couldn't pass the ball 5 yards to each other. Celtic were absolutely honking as well. And as you say, it could have possibly been 3 or 4-0. Just for the fact that they were honking it didn't end up there. There was 2 clear penalties that weren't given for some reason. I mean, when is the last time we've ever been able to say we got away with 2 stonewall penalties against MD, never mind Old Firm?
Yeah, I just think that when you get in, and I talked about it in the blog that I thought that perhaps being sacked at Bristol and Aberdeen would maybe give him a certain element of humility about him. I would have sat down with the senior players and get into their heads and what their thoughts were as well. So he's either seen enough of Keith Lasley from his first tenure at the club to decide that he'd be better off playing a centre half in his position, or he's just kind of come in to ruffle some feathers, and I think it's backfired.
How difficult would it have been for McGee to look back, say 6-7 months, what was our best performances, right? Accies, St Mirren, Rangers, what was the team, how did we line up, how did we play, right? That's what we should be starting for, because if that's where we're getting the best out of the players we've got, that's who should be playing, you know. Never mind experimenting with all these different kind of players and, you know, terrible positions and whatever else. You know, just look back at what worked before and send that out until you get to know the players. Right, that's working, that's not working. You know, the arrogance of McGee is, as you say, you know, it's unbelievable. He's not done anything in his time yet to endear me. And I think it'll be a long time coming as well.
I understand that, and in a sense I agree with that, but the problem is, you're saying look back at the teams and see when we've done well. You know, we were able to name 4 games out of 40. You know, it's we're talking to the end of the, sorry, to the beginning of the year there, I assume. So it's not as if we've got a settled team that we're doing well. But and again, I'm not trying to suggest that what he did was right. I'm just saying that basically what I'm saying is it pleased me that we didn't go 4-5-1 with Skippy in midfield, in my opinion. We tried something else. It was stupid. Didn't work. But as I say, it wasn't even Barakoff, basically.
What did we play?
I couldn't tell you. It looked like honestly, it looked like some sort of 4-3-3, but when we didn't have the ball, Lou Moult went to left back. Joe Chalmers floated about, you know, with no discipline whatsoever. Marvin Johnson got to do what he wanted. I don't know, to be honest with you, but as I say, I'm not saying it was right, I'm not saying it was good, I'm just saying it wasn't what we were used to. And it pleased me that we at least started or tried to start something different, you know. And come next couple of weeks, we'll see what he tries again. If we end up going back to the 4-5-1 with Skippy in midfield, then it would just show that maybe that is the best way we've played and we're just not that good.
I do agree. I think the acid test will be after he's had a full week of the guys in double training sessions. He should be absolutely fully prepared for the trip to Pittodrie on Saturday. But by the same token, I just think that if he was the man regarded as an experienced head to steady the ship, what he's come in and done is shaking the place up a bit too much in terms of just sweeping changes for a big game. I just felt completely deflated by the whole performance on Saturday, not because I went into it expecting to get anything. I just thought that the new manager, and it would have shaken the place up for the right reasons. There would have been more determination, more spirit about the team. There was nothing. It was just as bad as anything we've seen under Ian Barraclough this season.
I agree. You know, as I say, I'm not saying it was the best move in the world, but as you say, it was a totally nothing game, in my opinion. There was no effort for either team. I thought, you know, and Celtic still strolled it. I think you are maybe reading a wee bit too much into everything here, because you're saying, you know, why didn't he do this? Why didn't he do that? Why did he not talk to the senior players? How do we know he didn't? He might have sat them down, Skippy and Lasley, you know, like that, and says, look, I know what yous are up to this game. Nobody's expecting it, and let's try something different. Yous are not going to start. I'm going to try this, I'm going to try that. You know, we don't know what he actually says, but...
So, well, that when the manager says, so, I'm putting my top striker bootleg left, do you agree with that?
No, not at all. I'm not saying that it was right. I'm just saying that he's tried something different. So I think you were going to say what I'm saying is complete conjecture as well. But, you know, I'm the king of contradiction, so if you're allowed to do it, I'm allowed to do it.
No. What I was going to say was, if he'd sat down and them said, right, we're going to try something different, you're on the bench, that's not talking to them, though. Like, I think Sparra's point was, though, actually getting their opinions on, you know, how things have been going, what's went wrong, what's went right, and taking it from there, rather than saying, right, you're no playing. Because I would imagine if he'd sat down with, like, McManus, Lasley, McDonald, and said, what's went wrong, what should we do? I doubt that Lasley and McDonald would have said, oh, put us on the bench.
No, again, I agree. And the problem I've got with that, though, is that there was shouts of, you know, the old boys running the team, basically. There's too many pals in there getting their own way. So if McGee's coming in and asking them, what do you want me to do, or, you know, what do you think I should do? You know, that's basically what there was talk of Barakoff getting, you know, a bit of stick for, or the old boys running the team, going behind his back and stuff like that, you know, basically causing him to get the boot. But it's, I think they're reading far, far too much into this after, what, 5 days and one game. So it's one of the ones I think we're just going to have to sit out a couple of weeks, see what's what, and then slowly start to form opinions then, rather than rush into basically making things up. And I'm talking about myself as well, when I'm obviously talking shite about, you know, he's talking to players and that as well. You know, I don't know nothing either, but I think we're just reading far too much into one game 3 days on a job.
I tend to agree to a certain extent, but again, and I've been one of the first to criticise the more experienced players for some of the performances so far this term, but I think he's got to be a bit less stubborn and actually leaning the guys that know the place better than he does for a bit of support, and you're going to have to turn to your senior pros. And again, there's an element that can be pointed at, fingers can be pointed at Steve Robinson or Stephen Craigan or Scott Leach, all guys who know the club very well, they know the current team. So for them, if he's went and spoken to them and they've not pointed out clear flaws in the way that he'd set up for the game on Saturday, then that's poor form from them as well. I know they might not be wanting to rock the boat when the manager's only in the job 5 days, but it was still a strange team selection, strange way to set up, so much so that 2 days after the event, we've still not worked out what formation we were trying to play.
I agree with basically parts of what you are all saying, and you know, I'm just saying, you know, I'm playing a wee bit of the devil's advocate as well, obviously, but it was a really, really strange one. You're saying, did they ask him? Louis Mote played left wing against, was it Dundee under Stevie Craigan? So is there a chance, you know, he's maybe said, you know, who can do this, who can do that? And Stevie Craigan's went, oh, Louis Mote played left wing once for me, you know. So again, it's all conjecture, to be fair. And I think that, as I say, you know, we have to concentrate on basic facts rather than trying to analyse things 5 days into, you know, what is essentially a new job. There's three players there who were there in the past. Scott Leach is there, he's doing a different role this time so far. You know, Craggs is there doing something else as well. He was on the telly on Saturday, so yeah. In my opinion, that was a bit of a mistake. If he's the one, you know, I sort of touched on it earlier, if he's the one taking the team the last couple of weeks, he should at least have been in and around the dugout rather than on the telly. I know he's got contractual agreements and things like that, but you know, I'm sure he would have liked to skip that one game if we'd really, really wanted him to.
Yeah, you're right. That annoyed me from early on in his tenure as well, that when he was only 2 or 3 days in the job and he was doing BT Sport when Celtic were playing Stjarnan, and you're thinking, surely it would be better that he's actually getting settled into his job at Fir Park, and that should be the priority. But I think we're sometimes a bit too lenient with these guys and their media commitments when things aren't going so well. I think they should be reminded that their main focus is their job at Motherwell Football Club. But that's not me questioning the professionalism and the dedication of Stephen Craigan. I just believe that these two conflicting roles sometimes, they work against each other.
Well, I think we know it all comes to the money. You know, it's obviously, there's obviously players in our team who, no matter how good or bad they were playing, they're on the telly, they're on the radio every week, you know. So it's obviously something they've got, and probably running into their club contracts as well. You know, they're allowed to go and do so much media work to top up their pretty average wages.
I'm sure this Jarman gig was probably sorted out long before Craigan was rushed into the hot seat after the Morton game. I'm sure his easy jet flight was booked.
No, this was the summer. It was one of Celtic's qualifiers.
Oh, right. So I thought you meant when he just took the Motherwell job. it's true. To be fair, I'm quite sure everybody thinks they can still do two jobs at once, and you know, it's only a day, it's only this, it's only that, and you know, we're Motherwell, we'll just roll over and let our wee tummy get tickled. We are the kind of controversy with these things. You know, we'll let McCall away for his Scotland duties. That was the start of McCall losing it at Motherwell, really.
Yeah, anyway, you would expect that the exact same as, well, I suppose the second the season after that, McCall led us to second place, but I think we would all agree that the performances that season weren't as good as the one prior to it, albeit he lost a lot of players. But it looks like McGee will still be the number two to Gordon Strachan as well, now that he's committed to another 2 years.
What I was going to say was these people, these players, these coaches, they would probably tell you they'd be sitting in the house watching it anyway. So, you know, why should they earn a couple of £100 to sit and analyse it on telly or to be part of it? McCall and McGee is maybe a bit different because they're going to be away a couple of days at a time. But, you know, to the television work guys, they're going to tell you that. But no, I think that's maybe, again, just looking into things a bit too much at the moment. But see, there's not another real Scotland game for a year, basically. Anyway, so there's going to be a couple of friendlies, probably, but there's not really anything to distract McGee at the moment, I suppose.
Something that certainly did distract the attention of the supporters and also stopped the game on Saturday was a protest between Motherwell and Celtic supporters. A police tape and tennis balls thrown onto the pitch as an act against the fans, against criminalisation bill. This is something that we've kind of brushed upon in the podcast previously. There was a possibility of a representative of Fans Against Criminalisation coming on the podcast. We then received a blog that was far too Celtic orientated, it must be said, to actually go ahead with it. We do very much support the kind of heavy hands, empty stands campaign to a certain degree and have a certain understanding of what these guys are trying to achieve. But Saturday wasn't a great example of a way to go about it, it must be said. Firstly, Jay, almost kind of doing things in unity with the Green Brigade in particular. It's not something that sits particularly well with me, and I know from speaking to yourself after the game, you were very much in the same boat.
Yeah, and I think the problem is that I think a lot of Motherwell fans would have felt the same. And the issue is, I mean, you're right, first and foremost, you're right. I mean, I think I would assume all of us would say that we support the cause of heavy hands, empty stands. There's no doubt whatsoever that Motherwell fans, and therefore I presume fans of other clubs, find themselves being unfairly targeted by stewards and police. And the bill itself is poor legislation. There's no clarity, it leaves a lot of grey area. And that grey area then allows police and stewards to interpret things either deliberately or accidentally, to interpret things that they can then, you know, challenge people on or arrest people on or throw people out on, when in reality the fans haven't really done anything wrong. So the legislation at the very least needs to be revised. The problem is that if you're going to have a campaign about that, the end goal has to be that you want the legislation to be revised, and doing a protest like what we did on Saturday won't help that cause, because we're talking about political legislation. In the bubble of being a Motherwell supporter, it might feel like it's important, but seeing the grand scheme of things, seeing Scottish politics, this is a nothing issue. In Scottish politics, this is an irrelevance. It's far, far down the priority list. So you need to get people talking about it. You need to raise it on the agenda. You need to make it a priority and get it debated. And the way you do that is by gaining support, by getting people behind your cause. Now, you guys might disagree with us, it would be interesting to know, but I think, again, if you're in that bubble, you know, us as well, I wouldn't say, I presume none of us would say we're part of the Motherwell boys, but when we go to the game, we're in and around them. So our experiences, although we might not be the ones getting chucked out, our experiences are, you know, to witness it firsthand. But out with that bubble, I don't think the majority of Motherwell fans are behind heavy hands, empty stands. That's not to say they're against it. You do get them, though. There are people who, you know, in Steelmen Online, you'll have people saying, well, I've been going for 40 years and I've never once been chucked out by a steward or arrested, so therefore, you know, this is a nonsense. This isn't the way it is. That's really poor logic. But you do get people who are against it. But I think the vast majority are indifferent. The vast majority of Motherwell fans go to a game, sit on their arse, sit quietly and go home again. And they couldn't really care less about Heavy Hands Empty Stands. So the way you change that is to get people behind your campaign and to build support. And the way you don't do that is by alienating your own supporters, which I think is what Saturday did. You know, the Heavy Hands Empty Stands statement talked about, you know, the bigger picture, the fact that, but that is the point. The bigger picture is to get to a stage where you've got enough support that they can't ignore you anymore. And you don't build that support by joining forces with folk who, not that long ago, were ripping seats out of the South Stand. Because there's an element of hypocrisy there. You can't on one hand say, oh, we're being unfairly treated, the police are heavy-handed, you know, the stewards are victimising us, but we're going to, you know, rip out seats in the South Stand. It doesn't work. And I think, you know, from everybody I've spoken to, at least, I think that the reaction to it is negative because people feel alienated. And I don't think it's purely because it's Celtic fans. I think it's purely because it's fans who whose behaviour has been unacceptable and are the sole reason or one half of the reason this legislation exists in the first place. So I understand the thought process behind it. It's nice to have two sets of opposing fans showing solidarity in an issue. Can understand why on paper it might have seemed like a good idea. But in reality, I think it's done far more harm than good, and it's been completely counterproductive to what I presume is the end goal of actually getting the legislation changed.
Yeah, so it's something that's been discussed in the Steelman Online forum and on Twitter and Facebook over the weekend, and that kind of sums up my point as well. I just think that things like flares and smoke bombs running on the pitch, even disrupting the game, whether you agreed with the point that they were trying to make or not, you're not allowed to do these things. So by doing it, you're diluting your message, and it's massively counterproductive. To be taken seriously, they've got to start acknowledging that not everything they're doing is right. Because until there's kind of certain debates going on just now, and you kind of look at it and go, well, I can see both sides of it, but the stubbornness and the failure to acknowledge their own failings is a big negative on the boys just now, and that's why they are struggling to gain the respect that they may believe they deserve.
Yeah, no, I agree completely with that. I think the issue is that you've got two possible aims for the Heavy Hands Empty Stands. It's either about making a statement, which is fair enough. You can do that in many ways, and one way is to, you know, join forces with Celtic fans, or it's to make a statement in part of a long process to getting the, you know, the end goal of changing the legislation. And you're completely right. The way you get that support, they need support from people who aren't directly affected by it. That's the point. They need to get people on board. And you do that by having a credible argument, by getting respect and trust. So if you come out and say, this conduct was unacceptable by our own fans, we do not condone this, we condemn it, it's counterproductive, you know, in terms of whether it's flares or running on the park or whatever it is, then it means that people who aren't affected or people who, you know, are indifferent to it will see that and will realise, all right, they're reasonable. You know, they're taking responsibility when they need to. And then it means that when you are victimised and there is heavy-handed stewarding or policing, when you then point it out, your argument is automatically given more respect and treated more seriously because people see that you are actually being fair and taking responsibility when it's needed. But we don't really see that. The only time we ever really hear about it is when, you know, there is a bit of heavy-handedness or whatever it is. And it kind of panders to the people who are against all this. It panders to the people who say, oh, well, it's just a group of football fans who are pissed off that they don't get to behave the way they want to. Even although we know that isn't correct, even although we know that there is, that it does go on and it is unacceptable, the image that then portrays is that, you know, it panders to those people and it plays right into their hands and it gets them absolutely nowhere.
Bukes, this season you've moved to the David Cooper stand, so you've perhaps got a slightly different view of these stands, certainly, and how things are going on. But what's your take on it certainly can't be denied that the guys there have enhanced the atmosphere. Another fantastic tribute to Joe Warwick on Saturday as well. But things like that have all kind of sadly been forgotten about because of the protest and perhaps all the debate that followed it as well?
Well, the problem is, for every Saturday where you've got the Joe Walk or a Paul McBurney tribute, you know, for every bit of good that gets done, there's always something else takes it another step back. Whether it's a flare, whether it's what happened at Morton, was, you know, was always going to happen. You know, it was a standoff, but, you know, at the end of the day, for every tribute, for every good thing that gets done, there's always another backward step. You know, and the guys at the end of the East Stand are brilliant. You know, I've got pals who've got kids that go in there, you know, older kids, but they still, you know, they've moved to join in there. They think that's the best thing ever. And when they're on form, it is the best thing ever. But when it's spoiled by, right, no pyro, no party, or, you know, some other act or stupid, eh, that just is done outside the realms of, well, you can't do that. You know, you can't just do what you want. You know, I mean, they had good dialogue with the club to get that, you know, right, we're going to be standing in there, we're going to be doing this, we're going to be that. And the club, you know, said, aye, that's fine. Something somewhere seems to be lost going forward between them and the club. You know, it would be great if the club would come out and say, no, that's our supporters, and, you know, we back them unanimously. But when the support still continues to disappoint, whether we, you know, minor setbacks, it's a difficult balance to go forward with. You know, I mean, the likes of Derek Watson or whatever, they always had good communication with the club, and I don't see why that shouldn't continue. But it still has to be taken forward responsibly. You know, acts of responsibility have to be weeded out. Whether that's with, you know, telling the guys that they're this, but you're no welcome in amongst us, or just don't do it, basically. And they will, I'm sure they would get a lot more support for your kind of run of the mill support.
I think you've sort of had it right in the, you know, hit the nail right in the head there, because as you say, it's going back, what, 3-4 years, maybe a bit longer, we weren't allowed to stand up in that section. You mentioned, obviously, you know people with kids that stand around about there. We stand, you know, around about them as well. We're at the back, they sit towards the front. You know, it's, as you say, when they're on form, brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. That's where the atmosphere is generated. It's great. But as you say, you know, we weren't allowed to stand there at points. They built up, you know, a great rapport with the club. They've got their drum, they do their banners, they do their display. It's brilliant. You know, there was times when they were moaning that clubs wouldn't let the drum in, other clubs wouldn't let the drum in when they go away. If they still have to ask permission for the drum, you know, that's probably going to become a regular occurrence, because they're going to say, oh, these are the guys, you know, that cause all the hassle. And, all this sort of behaviour is just going to do nothing but lead to things taking a backward step. So, and the club as well, the club are going to start distancing themselves as well. You say, it's obviously great if, you know, the club can, you know, keep that communication going and, you know, work with them as well to help them out. But as you say, it's when there's people causing bother or, you know, doing things they're not supposed to, basically, it's going to basically just, you know, take it back a couple of steps, and we're going to end up having to sit down when we're at the football and stuff like that again.
I think it must be said as well, though, it is a huge ask to guys like Derek Watson and John McAlpine, and if either are actually listening to the podcast, I mentioned you two guys specifically as I was talking to you on Saturday night. I think it's a hard ask for them, the guys in their mid-20s, to tell 18 to 16 to 18 year olds to behave themselves at the football when they're young and daft at times. So it's a difficult responsibility to almost kind of act as the childminders in certain instances, and that is the kind of setback that they face, because a lot of the younger, immature guys let them down in numerous occasions, and it must be fairly frustrating for them to watch. But the protests are highly diluted by the actions of people that outsiders perhaps associate as part of their group.
Well, see, you're completely spot on. I mean, there's you get self-policing, but that can only go so far. You're completely correct. I mean, you know, the core guys that we all know that are part of the Motherwell Boys are, you know, really, they're there to create support, you know, create atmosphere. And, you know, those are the guys who are often let down by, you know, the folk on the fringe, if you like, who, you know, engage in behaviour that is unacceptable. I think maybe that's where heavy hands, empty stands could come in. You know, if it becomes a fact, you know, if that's why their campaign being so quiet when people do step out of line, that's where it's an issue. Because if you don't come out and you don't say, right, we do not, this guy set off a flare, you know, it's really counterproductive to what we're trying to do. It makes basically everybody who may actually listen to our arguments that we're being victimised, it makes those people completely turn off to our arguments, because they point and go, well, you're breaking the rules. You know, there needs to be more effort to kind of point that out. It should be a more rounded campaign if they're genuinely serious about getting legislation changed. Because, again, when you just ignore those things, or even, you know, you had people sort of trying to defend the wee guy who ran on at half-time on Saturday to take selfies with Celtic players. Now, I completely understand when people say it's harmless. It is. You know, all that's happened is he's got a few extra photos in his phone with Celtic players. But at the end of the day, he broke the law. You know, you're not allowed on the park. And by kind of condoning that and saying, oh, it was harmless, you're completely ruining your whole argument, because your argument can't then be, oh, we're victimised, because the counter-argument is, well, stop breaking the rules then. So you're completely right. They cannot, you know, you can't keep people, you know, in check. That's not their job. They're there to enjoy the football. They shouldn't have to, you know, worry about keeping other fans in check. But by the same, you know, a similar vein, you can't then expect people to buy into your argument you're being victimised when too many people are stepping out of line on a regular basis.
Well, hopefully I think we'll have Derek Watson on in the coming weeks as well, and we can kind of discuss this in even further detail. I know that it's almost been a regular occurrence that we do, and I think we do, and we certainly try to see it from their side as much as we possibly can, but I just think that perhaps it wasn't the smartest of ideas, almost been seen to stand side by side, particularly a group of Celtic fans that are known for having a rather controversial message, and in more recent times ripped up a stadium. So it's not sending a great message out to those who are looking to be won over by them, that's for sure.
I just want to say as well, I don't think it's fair on the people singled out either. I know we sort of touched on that as well, and I know they're only mentioned because we know them, you spoke to them. I don't think it's fair to sort of put it on their shoulders, so I don't think it's fair, basically. Sorry, but I don't know who's the guys behind the heavy hands, empty stands. You know, if it's the same people that we know, as Jay said, if they don't come out and condone these sort of things, or they, you know, shrug it off as if, you know, there was no harm done or whatever, it does ruin the argument. But, you know, I just don't think it's fair that we've pointed these guys out, you know, just in case, you know, as you say, these guys might just want to go to the football and enjoy themselves and, you know, take nothing to do with any of these, you know, the negative things. But I'm a bit uneasy with these guys getting called out.
No, I certainly don't think it was calling them out. It was more just
I
think everywhere they're going to have figureheads, and they just happen to be the figureheads of the group.
That's fair enough, man. But I don't know enough about the two organisations, so it was just sat a bit uneasy with me, sorry.
No, not at all. Wednesday night at the Electric Bar is the MFC podcast first tour date. After that, we play Wembley. Tour of the States, and then finishing it off at Hampden. But we started at the Electric Bar. Kevin Twaddle, Brian Martin, Rob McKinnon, and Martin Corrigan, along with, hopefully, a member of the current coaching staff, if a certain club employee decides to answer his phone.
Good luck.
He'll possibly answer on Thursday. Well, it's free entry for all. You don't have to be a... It's a kind of in tandem with the Well Society. You don't have to be a society member. If you mention the podcast at the door, you can bring a friend for free as well. Bukes, thank you very much for your time, mate. I know Jay's messaging me on Facebook saying he's dying for a piss, so I need to wrap this up as quickly as possible.
I'll just go pee.
I told him I would not ask him a few questions for a couple of minutes.
You've missed your remember well. You're losing it.
No, we decided that we will put that out. The same question that's on the Steel Men Online. Your most memorable individual performance by a Motherwell player. In any game that you can think of, we'll collate the answers. There's already a thread in the Steel Men Online too, if you want to add to that. We'll go over the best ones next week. Guys, thanks very much as always.
Cheers.
Cheers. Pleasure.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you. Goodbye.
Cross the road.